Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 277, titled Rags to Riches, Mark Rich, BCCI, and the Bush Family Terror Connection. This is being recorded on February 17th of the year 2001. As I'm speaking, much of the news, at least in the United States, is being dominated by Bill Clinton's pardon of Mark Rich, an international financier and an individual with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard. Mark Rich was a fugitive from justice, or at least officially that would be the case, and the firestorm surrounding Clinton's pardon of Mark Rich is very, very interesting in a number of different respects. First of all, the fact that it's garnering as much attention is interesting because George W.'s father, George Herbert Walker Bush, pardoned many of the key players in the Iran-Contra scandal just before Cap Weinberger was going to be the then Secretary of State. Caspar Weinberger was going to stand trial. That did not occasion quite as much controversy. The controversy surrounding Bill Clinton's pardon of Mark Rich is also significant for a number of interesting details that have escaped the observation of a number of people. Note the following. This is from the front page of the Los Angeles Times of Thursday, February 15th of the year 2001. It's by Robert L. Jackson and Richard A. Serrano. It's headlined, U.S. Attorney to Probe Pardon of Rich. Now listen to the following. This is datelined Washington and reads in part as following. The U.S. attorney in New York has opened a criminal investigation to determine if President Clinton's last-minute pardon of fugitive commodities broker Mark Rich was secured with illegal payments, sources in the federal government said Wednesday. The decision by Mary Jo White, a Democratic appointee, to investigate the Rich pardon came just a day after President Bush criticized congressional reviews of the matter, saying it was, quote, time to move on, unquote. Bush's remark dampened interest within the Justice Department for a criminal investigation, said one source familiar with the matter, which in turn prompted White to act. We'll note that a Democratic appointee, Mary Jo White, is moving to investigate the Rich pardon, but note that George W. Bush said it was time to move on. Note that the Justice Department under John Ashcroft also believes that this is time to move on. Why are the Republicans suddenly becoming so civic-minded and so courteous? Well, a hint is contained in the following story, this from the San Jose Mercury News of Friday, February 16th of the year 2001. Article by Tom Brune and John Riley of Newsday. It's headlined, Clinton denies wrongdoing in pardon, cites Israeli influence on Rich case. And this is about an interview that Clinton gave on Geraldo Rivera's show, Rivera Live, on CNBC. Skipping down, Clinton commented, the former president pointed out that Mark Rich was once represented by lawyer Louis Libby, L-I-B-B-Y, now Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff. It's terrible, he told Rivera. I mean, he had three big-time Republican lawyers, including Dick Cheney's chief of staff. Well, still more. Are people wondering now, perhaps, why suddenly George W. Bush is not real keen on investigating this? A bigger and broader hint is contained in the following story. This is from the Financial Times of London of February 6th of the year 2001. That was a Tuesday. In the Avenue of the Americas column, there is an item called The Center of It All. And skipping down, after 4 years of work, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee issued its final report on the messy BCCI affair in 1992, listing several matters for further investigation. Number 9 on the list of 20, quote, BCCI's financing of commodities and other business dealings of international criminal financier Mark Rich, unquote. BCCI lent Rich tens of millions of dollars in the 1980s, the report says, and his commodity firms were used by the bank in connection with its involvement in U.S. agriculture guarantee programs. Well, the BCCI also had, as I've said so many times about many things, including BCCI, more connections than a switchboard. It was deeply connected to the Iran-Contra affair and a number of other things, including the savings and loan scandal. We're going to talk about some of the many connections of BCCI, excuse me. But note here that Mark Rich was involved with getting agricultural guarantee, with getting credits, and that his commodities firm was involved with U.S. agriculture guarantee programs. U.S. Department of Agriculture guarantee programs were one of the many vehicles for the arming of Iraq and Saddam Hussein under, or as part of, what came to be known as the Iraqgate scandal, or the Banco Nazionale del Lavoro scandal. And taking a look now at the appendices to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report, let's read item number 9. This, by the way, is from the website www.aci.net/Kalliste, K-A-L-L-I-S-T-E, /BCI123.htm. And skipping down in the matters for further investigation in the appendices to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report, we read, BCCI's financing of commodities and other business dealings of international criminal financier Mark Rich. Mark Rich remains the most important figure in the international commodities markets and remains a fugitive from the United States following his indictment on securities fraud. BCCI lending to Rich in the 1980s amounted to tens of millions of dollars. Moreover, Rich's commodities firms were used by BCCI in connection with BCCI's involvement in the U.S. guarantee programs through the Department of Agriculture. One wonders whether perhaps Clinton was doing in connection with the Mark Rich pardon was lighting a fire under the entire Bush administration, because if, in fact, Mark Rich, as appears probable, was involved with the Iraqgate scandal and the arming of Saddam Hussein, that would not only eventually bring down George W. Bush's administration, because Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense, James Baker, who handled the Florida recount for Bush, was Secretary of State, Colin Powell was Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, of course Bush's father was President of the United States, but it might even bring down George W. himself. A lot of people stood to be tarred by this particular brush. No doubt the conspiracy crowd will simply focus on connections between BCCI and First American Corporation. BCCI had many connections, but those which would ultimately go to the Rose Law Firm were altogether tangential. It'll be interesting to see if the conspiracy crowd manages to figure out some of the connections that are being discussed in this particular program, and that's not meant to be condescending, but rather to toss a bit of a professional gauntlet under the circumstances. More about the many connections of Mark Rich. This from the San Jose Mercury News of Thursday, February 15th of 2001. This is a Mercury News story by Jody Enda and James Cunin. It's Dateline Washington, headlined, Israel Pressed for Rich's Pardon. And of Rich's many connections here, we read, on its face, Israeli support for Rich might seem curious, since Rich did extensive business with Iran and Iraq, two of Israel's mortal enemies, in apparent violation of U.S. law. And BCCI was certainly deeply involved with the machinations surrounding the Iran-Contra scandal. And the ninth recommendation here, talking about Rich's dealings through BCCI in connection with U.S. guarantee programs through the Department of Agriculture, would suggest very strongly that Rich may have been involved in the Iraqgate affair as well. Number 18 in the list of recommendations also reflects, possibly, on the Iraqgate. In fact, it reflects directly on BCCI and the Iraqgate affair. We read from the appendices, annotated as noted in the first discussion, at www.aci.net, etc., etc. Number 18 in the recommendations in the appendices to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report reads as follows. The relationship between BCCI and the Banca Nazionale del Lavoro. BCCI and the Atlanta branch of BNL had extensive relationship in the United States, with the Atlanta branch of BNL having a substantial number of accounts in BCCI's Miami offices. BNL was, according to federal indictments, a significant financial conduit for weapons to Iraq. BCCI also made loans to Iraq, although of a substantially smaller nature. Given the criminality of both institutions and their interlocking activities, further investigation of the relationship could produce further understanding of Saddam Hussein's international network for acquiring weapons and how Iraq evaded governmental restrictions on such weapons acquisitions. And since the arming of Iraq was said through the BNL scandal here and through the Atlanta branch of the BNL was accomplished largely through the Department of Agriculture and, quote, agricultural credits, unquote, one wonders whether perhaps Mark Rich's dealings with regard to the Department of Agriculture through BCCI would also go back to the Iraqgate scandal and Bush's dad, Colin Powell, James Baker, and Dick Cheney. And note that Dick Cheney's chief of staff is a former attorney for Mark Rich. There is another very, very interesting connection through BCCI. Number 10 in the Matters for Further Investigation from the appendices here is described as follows. The nature, extent, and meaning of the ownership of shares of other U.S. financial institutions by Middle Eastern political figures. Political figures and members of the ruling family of various Middle Eastern countries have very substantial investments in the United States. Well, some of those very substantial investments would involve some apparent investing through elements connected to the BCCI, specifically James R. Bath, and none other than Arbusto Energy, or no institution other than Arbusto Energy, the Bush family energy firm, and also the family of Osama bin Laden. We're going to review a section now from For the Record program number 186, What Does the W in George W. Bush Stand For?, recorded on December 12th of 1999. And I've dealt with the Bush-Bin Laden connection in a number of broadcasts, specifically in 182, 186, 248, and now at 256, and now, of course, number 277, reviewing the Arbusto Energy, James R. Bath, George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, and Bin Laden connection. We listen to the following from For the Record program number 186. Review some of the aspects of the George Bush Bin Laden connection and add some supplemental material. We're going to take a look at a suppressed biography of George Bush. This is entitled Fortunate Son, subtitled George W. Bush and the Making of an American President. This was authored by J.H. Hatfield, published in hardcover by St. Martin's Press, copyright 1999. Actually, it was copyright 2000 by Omega Publishing, although it came out in 1999. And this book was suppressed and recalled after it came out that J.H. Hatfield had a criminal record. Of the connection between the Bin Laden family and George W. Bush through his Arbusto Energy Company, we read as follows in Fortunate Son. Speaking of Bush, J.H. Hatfield writes, in June 1977, he formed his own drilling company, Arbusto Energy. Arbusto means Bush in Spanish. Like his father, who made his fortune in the oil business with the money of others, George W. founded Arbusto with the financial backing of investors including James R. Bath, a Houston businessman whom Bush apparently first met when they were in the same Texas Air National Guard unit. Tax documents and personal financial records show that Bath, an aircraft broker with business ties to Saudi Arabian sheiks, had invested $50,000 in Arbusto, granting him a 5% interest in two limited partnerships controlled by Bush. In one of the most bizarre footnotes to history, Time magazine described Bath in 1991 as, quote, a deal broker whose alleged associations run from the CIA to a major shareholder and director of the Bank of Credit and Commerce, unquote. BCCI, as it was more commonly known, was closed down in July of 1991 amid charges of multi-billion dollar fraud and worldwide news reports that the institution had been involved in covert intelligence work, drug money laundering, arms brokering, bribery of government officials, and aid to terrorists. An accounting commission by the Bank of England finally exposed the extent of BCCI's deficits and criminal offenses, forcing the bank's eventual collapse. Bath was never directly implicated in the BCCI scandal, but according to the Outlaw Bank, an award-winning 1993 book by Time correspondents Jonathan Beatty and S.C. Gwynn, Bath originally, quote, made his fortune by investing money for Sheikh Khalid bin Mahfouz and another BCCI-connected Saudi, Sheikh bin Laden, unquote. Allegedly the father of none other than Osama bin Laden, the man accused by the U.S. government of masterminding the August 1998 terrorist bombings of the American embassy in Kenya and Tanzania, which killed more than 250 people. According to news reports, in a 1976 trust agreement drawn shortly after Bush's father was appointed director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Saudi Sheikh Salim M. bin Laden appointed Bath as his business representative in Texas. Bin Laden, along with his brothers, owned Bin Laden Brothers Construction, one of the largest construction companies in the Middle East. In a 1991 deposition, Bath testified he was the sole director of Skyway Aircraft Leasing Limited, a Houston company owned by Khaled bin Mahfouz. Bin Mahfouz had been a major shareholder in BCCI, which had been accused of using Mideast oil money to seek ties to political leaders in other countries throughout the 1970s and 1980s. By the way, I would note that Oliver North used BCCI for many of his Iran-Contra machinations. Time reporters Beatty and Gwynn suggest in their book that the $50,000 Bath invested in George W.'s Arbusto Energy Drilling Company may have belonged to Bath's Saudi clients, since the Houston businessman, quote, had no substantial money of his own at the time, unquote. Ironically, the money used to underwrite the first business venture of a possible future president of the United States may have been derived, at least in part, from the family fortune of Saudi terrorist Osama bin Laden. According to court documents, Bath also swore that in 1977 he represented four prominent and wealthy Saudi Arabians as a trustee and used his name on their investments in the United States. In return, he received a 5% interest in their deals. Federal authorities, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, and the FBI later investigated Bath after allegations were made by one of his American business partners that the Saudis were using Bath and their enormous financial sources to influence U.S. policy. And skipping down, in 1990, in an attempt to distance himself and his presidential father from the growing BCCI scandal, George W. stated in an interview that neither he nor the elder Bush had ever conducted business with James Bath. Junior went on record at the time as saying that he met the Houston businessman in 1970 when both were fighter pilots at the Air National Guard base at Ellington. President Bush, quote, knows Bath the way he knows thousands of people, unquote, his son told the press, and the two men could not be considered good friends. Quote, I've never done business with him, Bath, and I don't know, and I know the president hasn't either, unquote. Well, at least in the case of George W., he was lying. He obviously had been doing business with him. He was Bath owned 5% in two limited partnerships controlled by Bush. Note again that, as written here by J.H. Hadfield, Saudi Sheikh Salim M. bin Laden appointed Bath as his business representative in Texas. So Bath was Sheikh bin Laden's business representative in Texas, that the father of Osama bin Laden. More about George W.'s denial of knowing Bath, and again, that was obviously a lie. A few months later, however, the release of tax documents and personal financial records forced George W. to admit that Bath had indeed been one of Arbusto Energy's original investors. Bush said that to his knowledge, Bath's investment was from personal funds, and no available evidence existed to determine that the money came from Saudi interests. Numerous questions remain unanswered as to Bath's motives behind his investment in George W.'s first business venture. And in a footnote, U.S. intelligence agencies were concerned that bin Laden might attempt to assassinate George W. or the former president when both men toured the Middle East and met with Arab and Jewish leaders in November of 1998, only 4 months after the embassy bombings in Kenya and Tanzania. And bear in mind that when Bath invested $50,000 in Arbusto Energy, as written here and reported by Time magazine reporters Beatty and Gwynn, Time, a very conservative publication, by the way, the Houston businessman, quote, had no substantial money of his own at the time. And as noted by Hadfield, ironically, the money used to underwrite the first business venture of a possible future president of the United States may have been derived at least in part from the family fortune of Saudi terrorist Osama bin Laden. More about the Bath-Bin Laden-Bush connection from a book which was cited in that J.H. Hadfield book, Fortunate Son, a suppressed biography. This is about BCCI. It's called The Outlaw Bank, subtitled A Wild Ride into the Secret Heart of BCCI. This is co-authored by Jonathan Beatty, B-E-A-T-Y, and S.C. Gwynn, G-W-Y-N-N-E. It's copyright 1993 by Ramjack Incorporated, and this was published in the United States by Random House. And the White referred to here is a Bill White, who was a business partner of James R. Bath and later found himself at loggerheads with Mr. Bath. Quote, and this is Bill White talking here about his former business partner and eventual enemy. You have to understand that they thought I was one of them, unquote, White said earnestly. Again quoting, Bath told me that he was in the CIA. He told me he had been recruited by George Bush himself in 1976 when Bush was director of the agency. That made sense to me, especially in light of what I had seen once we went into business together. Bath and George Jr. were pals and flew together in the same Air National Guard unit, and Bath lived just down the street from the Bush family when George Sr. was living in Houston. He said Bush wanted him involved with the Arabs and to get into the aviation business, unquote. White began pulling documents out of his cases as he talked, quote, that's how Bath, who didn't know anything about the aviation business, became one of the biggest jet aviation dealers in the country within a couple of years. Look, here's a Boeing he's leasing to the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company. That's a multi-million dollar jet. And that's how he became a representative for Sheikh Khalid bin Mahfouz, whose family controls the National Commercial Bank of Saudi Arabia. And I would note that's also how he came to be the Texas business representative for Sheikh bin Laden, the father of Osama bin Laden. That, once again, excerpted from For the Record Program 186 from December 12th of 1999. Now, returning to the appendices and matters for further investigation from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report on BCCI, we're going to take a look now at a possible link between a terror case being investigated, and as we're speaking, Osama bin Laden is being investigated, and one that has just concluded being, quote, investigated, namely the bombing of Pan Am 103, in which the name of Manzar al-Qassar was front and center. Number four in the matters to be investigated reads as follows. BCCI's relationships with convicted Iraqi arms dealer Sarkis Sognalian and Syrian drug trafficker terrorist and arms trafficker Manzar al-Qassar and other major arms dealers. Well, Manzar al-Qassar has, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard, dealt with in, for the record, RFA 32, 35, and 38, and numerous for the record programs. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who got the following from Panorama magazine of January 25th of the year 2001. This is called The Great Hunt by Pino Buongiorno, and it reads in part as follows. Recently, in the United Kingdom, the Spanish Secret Services, probably tipped off by the Mossad, made a sensational discovery. A mysterious British company, Imperial Consolidated, acting on behalf of Osama bin Laden, tried to buy arms from the notorious Syrian trafficker Manzar al-Qassar. The sum available to bin Laden was exorbitant, over $400 million for missiles and other sophisticated equipment. That article, again, describing a potential link between Osama bin Laden and Manzar al-Qassar other than BCCI. Manzar al-Qassar was deeply involved in the Iran-Contra scandal and in the bombing of Pan Am 103 and allegedly tipped off U.S. and British authorities about the impending bombing, according to John Loftus, as we looked at in For the Record program number 29. What we're going to do now is to listen to an excerpt of For the Record program number 228, recorded on April 30th of the year 2000. George Bush's name has, of course, been at the very center of the Iran-Contra scandal. Not only was George Bush not out of the loop, but as we looked at in material from the book The Secret War Against the Jews by Mark Loftus, by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, George Bush's private intelligence agency, the interagency governmental networks put together as a result of the recommendations growing out of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism, were in fact the main vehicle for effecting the Iran-Contra scandal, as well as the Iraqgate affair that overlapped it. In the book, research credit on the following also goes to a member of the listening audience who researched that last item for us. This is from Iran-Contra, the Final Report by Lawrence E. Walsh, Independent Counsel. This edition is published by Times Book, a division of Random House Incorporated, and it reproduces Volume 1 of the Office of Independent Counsel document in its entirety. Some of the remaining questions that Lawrence Walsh, the Iran-Contra special counsel, had for George Bush involved the following. Reading from the Iran-Contra final report, independent counsel's continuing investigation exposed evidence that called into question previous statements made by Vice President Bush concerning his knowledge of and involvement in the Iran-Contra matter. The purpose of a second interview with Bush was to resolve inconsistencies. The second interview would have focused primarily on these areas, and then skipping down. Bush's meeting with Israeli official Amiram Nir in July of 1986, particularly focusing on Secord's recollection that after Bush's report of this meeting, Reagan authorized the resumption of the Iran arms sales. So please note that one of the questions that Lawrence Walsh had for George Bush involved a meeting with that Bush had with Israeli official Amiram Nir in July of 1986, focusing on Richard Secord's recollection that after Bush's report of this meeting, Reagan authorized the resumption of the Iran arms sales. Now note the following detail. This research for us by the same listener. This comes from the book Gideon's Spies, The Secret History of the Mossad. That was authored by Gordon Thomas. It was published by Thomas Dunn Books. This is a subsidiary of St. Martin's Press. This book was published in March, copyright 1989. And there's discussion in here of that particular meeting at the King David Hotel in Tel Aviv. This involved the meeting between Amiram Nir and George Bush. Please note that there is speculation here that Amiram Nir, who died in a plane crash, may very well have been killed in order to avoid the resulting embarrassment to George Bush. This Amiram Nir was killed in a private plane crash in Mexico. Please note that a couple of other people who died in a plane crash in a relative not too long after that were also allegedly at this meeting. Reading now from Gideon Spies by Gordon Thomas, we find, increasingly, Mossad believed that the CIA had murdered Nir. According to Ari Ben Menashe, quote, Israeli intelligence has always believed it was a well-executed CIA operation. Nir's death ensured that there would be no embarrassment for Reagan and Bush at the trial of Oliver North, unquote. Support for this theory came from a U.S. Navy commander who had accompanied Nir to Tehran on the fruiterer's mission to free the Beirut hostages. The commander's story revolved around his claim that Nir had met with George Bush, then vice president, on July 29, 1986 at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem to brief him about the ongoing sale of U.S. arms via Israel to Iran. According to the writer Joel Bainerman, quote, Nir was secretly taping the entire conversation, and this provided him with evidence linking Bush to the arms for hostages deal. At the meeting were McKee and Gannon, who would die in the Pan Am flight over Lockerbie. The allegation being here that Charles McKee and Mr. Gannon, members of the McKee team, military intelligence operatives who had been in Lebanon to locate the U.S. hostages, and who, according to the Pan Am Insurance Investigators report, the Aviv report, had learned of the connection between the Iran-Contra operators and Manzer El-Kassar, a Syrian arms dealer who was at the very center of the Iranian arms deals and who also secured East Bloc arms for the Contras, and who, according to the Pan Am Insurance Investigators report, was deeply involved in the bombing of Pan Am 103, McKee and Gannon and the McKee team were on their way back to the United States to blow the whistle about Manzer El-Kassar and his involvement with the Iran-Contra team when Pan Am 103 went down. And Manzer El-Kassar's name has been linked to that bombing in a number of different contexts. The insurance investigators report blamed it on him. Other investigative reports have linked his name to the bombing in other ways. That, once again, excerpted from For the Record program number 228 from April 30th of 1999. So if the Mark Rich BCCI connection were followed to the very end of the trail, an awful lot of powerful people in power in Washington would stand to get sullied by the investigation. This concludes For the Record program number 277. For a detailed and annotated description of this program, visit www.spitfirelist.com. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.